I'll stay with her, Philip tried to insist. Are you sure? You look like you could use a little sleep yourself, Alex began.
Eleanor agreed.
Yala, you didn't sleep much on your flight, did you? You look so run down. I can see all the bags under your eyes. Let's go home and come back early tomorrow.
Philip finally relented.
Okay. But Alex, can you do me a favor? If Mummy wakes up any time soon, will you tell her I was here?
Of course. Alex smiled.
And will you tell her Nikki was here too?
Philip pressed her. Alex hesitated for a moment. She was concerned that any mention of Nikki would upset her mother again, but she also felt that her mother needed to mend her rift with him. It was the only way she would truly close her eyes in peace.
Let's see.
I'll try my best, Coco.
Chapter 4. Surrey, England. Anyone lucky enough to be a guest at Harlan's Court should wake in time to watch the sun rise above the gardens, Jacqueline Ling thought as she sipped the orange pekoe tea that had just been brought to her bedside on an exquisite bamboo tray. Propped up against four layers of goose-down pillows, she had the perfect view onto the pure symmetry of the box parterres, the majestic yew hedges beyond, and the morning mist rising over the Surrey Downs. It was these quiet moments before everyone began to assemble downstairs for breakfast that Jacqueline relished most during her frequent visits at the Shangs. In the rarefied stratosphere inhabited by Asia's most elite families, it was said that the Shangs had abandoned Singapore. "They've become so grand they think they're British," was the common refrain. Though it was true that Alfred Chang enjoyed a lifestyle that surpassed many a marquess at his 6,000-hectare estate in Surrey, Jacqueline knew it would be a mistake to assume that he had transferred all his allegiances to Queen and country. The simple truth was that over the decades, his three sons, all Oxbridge-educated naturally, had one by one taken English wives, all from appropriately aristocratic families, of course, and chosen to make their lives in England. So beginning in the early 80s, Alfred and his wife Mabel were compelled to spend greater parts of the year there. It was the only way they would get to see their children and grandchildren regularly. Mabel, being the daughter of Sien Sai Te and Rosemary Young Sien, was far more Chinese in her ways than her husband, who was an Anglophile even before his Oxford days in the late 1950s. At Harlan's Court, Mabel set about creating a decadent domain that indulged her favorite aspects of East and West. To restore the 19th-century Venetian revival-style house built by Gabriel Hippolyte de Taire, Mabel coaxed the great Chinese decorative arts historian Huang Pao Fan out of retirement to work alongside the legendary British decorator David Hicks. The interiors were given a marvelous facelift in the mid-1990s by David Milinovich, coinciding with Mabel's own, much less marvelous, facelift. The result was a ravishingly bold mix of modern European furnishings with some of the finest Chinese antiquities held in private hands. Harlan's Court soon became one of those great houses that everyone talked about. At first, many of the Burke's peerage crowd talked about how terribly vulgar it was for a Singaporean to buy one of the finest houses in Britain and try to run it in the old way, with its mind-numbing number of staff and all the trimmings. But the landed gentry accepted their invitations anyway, and after their visits, grudgingly had to admit that the Shangs hadn't mucked it up. The restoration was splendid. The grounds were even more splendid. And the food, well, that was utter heaven. In the decades that followed, guests the world over began to covet their invitations because word got out that Harlan's Court's chef, Marcus Sim, a Hong Kong-born prodigy who had trained with Freddie Girardet, was a genius in both classic French and Chinese cuisine. And it was the thought of breakfast this morning that made Jacqueline reluctantly get out of bed. She walked into the dressing room adjoining her bedroom and discovered a fire already burning in the fireplace. a vase of freshly cut Juliet roses arranged on the dressing table, and the outfit she had selected for the morning already hanging against the copper warming rack. Jacqueline slipped on her figure-hugging cream fit-and-flare sleeveless dress with iconic pointelle knit trim, marveling at how it had been warmed to the perfect temperature. She thought of weekends at other English estates where the bedrooms felt like iceboxes in the morning, and her clothes felt just as frozen when she put them on. "I don't even think that the Queen lives this well," Jacqueline thought, recalling that before Alfred and Mabel had moved in, her godmother, Sue, had sent a team over from Tyersal Park to help train the British staff properly. Asian hospitality standards were fused with English manor house traditions, and even her boyfriend Victor had been impressed the last time he visited. Holding up his Aubusy dress shoes one evening as they dressed for dinner, he said in astonishment, "Honey, they fucking ironed my shoelaces." This morning, it was the chef's eggs that most astonished Jacqueline as she sat at one end of the immense dining table in the Grade II heritage-listed breakfast room. How is it that only Marcus can make scrambled eggs like this?" she sighed to Mabel as she savored another forkful. "Doesn't your chef do good eggs?" Mabel asked. "Sven's omelets are fabulous, and he can poach perfectly. But there is something about these scrambled eggs that are absolutely divine. Fluffy, creamy, and just the right amount of runny. I look forward to every visit because of them. What is the secret?" "No idea. I never touch the eggs. But you must try some of this yu zhou, Cantonese for fish porridge. It's made with Dover sole that was caught just this morning," Mabel said.
"It's the cream. Marcus uses the top cream made from our Guernsey cows in the scrambled eggs," 12-year-old Lucia Shang piped up from the far end of the table.
"At last, she speaks."
"That's the first peep I've heard out of you all morning, Lucia. Now what's this book you're so engrossed in? You're not still reading those Hunger Games vampire novels, are you?" Jacqueline asked.
"The Hunger Games isn't about vampires, and I stopped reading them ages ago. I'm reading Siddhartha now."
"Ah, Hess. He's quite good." "It sounds Indian," Mabel said, scrunching up her nose at her granddaughter.
"It's about the Buddha." "Aiya, Lucia, what are you doing reading about Buddha? You're a Christian, and don't forget that we come from a very distinguished long line of Methodists."
"Yes, Lucia, on your great-grandmother, Rosemary's side, the Youngs, your ancestors were actually the first Christians in southern China." Jacqueline agreed. Lucia rolled her eyes.
"Actually, if it wasn't for missionaries running amok in China after England won the Opium Wars, we'd all be Buddhists."
"Shut up, La! Don't talk back to Auntie Jacqueline," Mabel admonished.
"It's fine, Mabel. Lucia's just speaking her mind." Mabel wouldn't let it go, muttering to Jacqueline, Cantonese for "this half-breed granddaughter will be the death of me."
"Amma, I understand every word you're saying," Lucia said indignantly.
"No, you don't. Shut up and read your book."
Cassandra Shang, Mabel's daughter, and better known by those in her circle as Radio One Asia, entered the room, cheeks still flushed from her morning ride. Jacqueline did a double take, Cassandra's hair normally parted down the middle and pulled into a tight coil at the nape of her neck, Frida Kahlo style, was rather uncharacteristically braided intricately along the sides but flowing free down her back.
"Cass, I haven't seen your hair down like this in ages. This is a throwback to your Slade days. Looks marvelous."
Mabel peered at her daughter through her bifocals.
"Chi Sina,"
Cantonese for "so crazy."
"You're not a young girl anymore."
"It looks ridiculous."
Cassandra felt tempted to tell her mother that you could begin to see the facelift scars through the thinning hair in her scalp, but she resisted. Instead, she chose to acknowledge Jacqueline's compliment.
"Thanks, Jack, and you look ridiculously perfect as always. New dress?"
"No, la.
I've had this old rag for ages,
Jacqueline said deprecatingly. Cassandra smiled, knowing full well Jacqueline was wearing a one-of-a-kind Azzedine Alaya. Not that it even mattered what she wore. Jacqueline had the sort of beauty that made anything she put on look drop-dead chic. Cassandra headed to the sideboard, where she helped herself to a single toast point, a dollop of Marmite, and some fresh prunes. As she took her seat opposite Jacqueline, a footman approached, deftly placing her morning cappuccino, made with small-batch, single-origin beans, and iPad next to her.
Thank you, Paul,
Cassandra said, switching on the device and noticing that her email inbox was unusually full for this early in the morning. The first message came from her cousin Oliver in London. Otsien at Christie's.com.
Have you seen the photos yet?
Oy vey!
I can already imagine what your mother must be saying. Kasarasara at gmail.com.
Which photos?
While she waited for his response, an instant message came in from her sister-in-law, India Heskeith Shang. Cassandra looked up from her iPad and announced to everyone,
India just messaged me. Apparently, Casimir has an opening for his photography at Central St. Martin's tonight, and he didn't tell anyone. She's wondering if we want to go and surprise him. Lucia, your mother wants to know if you want to go up to London to see your brother's latest photos?
If it's going to be more pictures of his friends vomiting curry outside of pubs, I'm not interested,
Lucia replied.
Aya, don't talk like that. It's fine art. Casimir won an award for his photography last year,
Mabel told Jacqueline, in defense of her favorite grandson. Cassandra realized that Oliver must be talking about Casimir's photographs.
Well, I think these photos are going to be quite daring. I just got an email from Oliver, and apparently he's already seen them.
Oh, Oliver's back in London? Is he going to come to the show too?
Mabel asked.
I'm not sure, but India is now saying that Leonard can pick us up in the helicopter on his way from Southampton. We can all go to the opening together and then dinner at Clark's.
Alamak, another tasteless English dinner,
Mabel groaned. Cassandra checked her Facebook wall and let out a sudden gasp.
Oh, my God.
She clasped her hands over her mouth, staring at the photos that flashed through on her iPad. Oliver wasn't talking about Casimir's silly little exhibit, after all. These were the photos he was talking about.
What are you looking at now?
Another piece of dirty gossip from one of your unreliable kang taos.
Hokkien slang for context or connections, her mother asked derisively.
Jacqueline, you need to see this, Cassandra said, handing her the iPad.
Jacqueline peered at the screen and saw an image of Astrid standing on a turret next to an elephant.
I don't get it. What's the big deal? Jacqueline asked.
Oh, you're on the last photo. Scroll up. There's a whole series of photos.
Jacqueline waved her hand over the screen, her eyes widening as she scrutinized the images.
Are these real?
Looks pretty real to me,
Cassandra chuckled.
Dear me.
What is it? Mabel asked.
Jacqueline held up the iPad, and from across the table, Mabel could see the blaring headline. Exclusive pics of tech titan Charles Wu's lavish proposal to girlfriend Astrid Leong. But she's still married.
Alamak!
Let me see, let me see,
Mabel demanded excitedly. A footman wordlessly appeared at Jacqueline's side. She handed the iPad to him, and he dutifully walked it over to the other side of the table where Mabel was seated. Lucia, clearly not as engrossed in Siddhartha as she pretended to be, rushed over to peer at the pictures with her grandmother, reading aloud.
The ink hasn't even dried on Hong Kong tech titan Charles Wu's divorce papers yet, but this apparently didn't stop him from orchestrating an over-the-top marriage proposal to his gorgeous girlfriend Astrid Leong. The million-dollar proposal involved renting out the fairy tale Meranga Fort in Jodhpur, hiring more than 100 musicians and dancers, and having Bollywood superstar Shah Rukh Khan serenade them while an elephant helped to deliver the ginormous diamond ring. Looking at the pictures, Astrid has obviously said yes, but there's one small problem. As far as we know, this high-born beauty is still married to Charlie's arch-rival, the Singapore Tech wunderkind, Michael Teo.
Mabel squinted at the picture.
Ay-ya! Hou sao ka!
Cantonese for so shameful. When were these taken? Last weekend, it looks like, Jacqueline said.
Last weekend?
But isn't Astrid in Singapore with the rest of the family?
Obviously, she snuck out of town with Charlie.
My God, can you imagine how furious Felicity and Harry are going to be when they see this?
Cassandra said, shaking her head.
Not only that, but this is a disaster for her divorce case. Michael's going to have so much new ammunition now.
Poor Astrid. Jacqueline sighed.
Mabel huffed. Poor Astrid, my foot. She should be at her grandmother's bedside instead of splashed all over the news. How dare that Charlie Wu propose to her again, the cheek of him. Still trying to invade our family. I thought Felicity got rid of him years ago.
Oh, Mother, those two have been in love since day one. If Felicity had let it happen the first time around, the whole Michael Teo disaster would never have happened, Cassandra said.
Felicity was right to put a full stop to that nonsense. Those woos were completely unacceptable. That ghastly, vulgar mother of his, I'll never forget what she did to me.
What did Irene Wu do to you?
Jacqueline asked.
Cassandra rolled her eyes.
That's ancient history, Mom. Please don't bring it up again.
That woman tried to steal my seamstress. I found this girl, Minnie Pong, who did the most wonderful tailoring. She had a little shop next to Fitzpatrick's on Dunyan Road. So convenient. And she could replicate all the Nina Ritchie, Cherer, and Pharaoh dresses I loved so perfectly.
My goodness, Mabel, those Louis Pharaohs were fakes. They looked like they came straight from his Paris boutique.
Jacqueline lied. Mabel nodded indignantly.
Yes, I had everyone fooled.
But then that Irene Wu came along and tried to hire the girl to work in their tacky mansion full-time. So then I had to go and hire her full-time.
So you won? Jacqueline asked.
Yes.
But it should never have happened. I had to pay Minnie Pop almost 15% over what Irene offered to pay her.
It was 1987, Mom. Time to get over it, Cassandra said.
People like the Woos, they never know when to stop.
And now, look what's happened.
Once again, they are dragging our family name into the mud.
Who sent this article to you anyway?
Mrs. Lee Yongchen posted it to her Facebook page, Cassandra replied.
Mrs. Lee Yongchen is on Facebook? I don't believe it. The old lady can't even draw her own eyebrows,
Mabel exclaimed.
Rosie, that adopted daughter she treats like a slave, does everything for her. Ever since Mrs. Lee discovered Facebook, she's been posting like a fiend.
Every other day, there's either annoying photos of her grandchildren winning some award or pictures of some funeral she's attending.
Ay-ya, if Mrs. Lee knows about this, then the whole of Singapore will soon know. All her mahjong kakis.
Malay slang for mates or buddies. Although should you really be calling the cheating scoundrels who try to screw you at every mahjong game your buddies?
We'll find out about this, Mabel surmised.
Ama, I don't think you understand. This is on Facebook. The whole world can already see this,
Lucia informed her. Mabel tut-tutted sadly. Then I truly feel sorry for Sui. This is happening at the worst time. I thought Astrid was her last hope, but one by one all her grandchildren have disgraced her. How is she ever going to close her eyes in peace?
No wonder she changed her will yet again.
Really?
Jacqueline and Cassandra gasped in unison. Jacqueline sat bolt upright in her chair.
Is this why Alfred rushed back to Singapore?
Mabel looked a bit flustered.
I'm not supposed to say anything.
Say what? What did Dad tell you?
Cassandra prodded, leaning forward in anticipation.
Nothing, nothing,
Mabel insisted.
Mom, you're so bad at lying. You clearly know something. Come on, spit it out.
Mabel stared down at her bowl of porridge, looking conflicted.
Oh, well, there's no use trying to force her. After all these years, your mother still doesn't trust us.
So sad.
Jacqueline sighed, giving Mabel her seductive sideways stare.
See what you've done?
You've insulted Jacqueline,
Cassandra scolded her mother.
Hiya, you two. I know you are both such big mouths. If I tell you, you must promise not to say anything, okay?
The two ladies nodded in unison like obedient schoolgirls. Mabel, who had grown up surrounded by staff and usually spoke in her unfiltered manner with no thought to their presence, did the rare thing of making eye contact with George, the head footman, who immediately recognized her signal for privacy. George gestured quickly to the four other footmen, and they made a discreet exit from the morning room. As soon as the door closed, Mabel said in a hushed tone,
I know your father had a big meeting with all the lawyers from Tan and Tan 2 days ago. Very hush-hush. And then Freddie Tan went off to see Su Yi. By himself.
Jacqueline said, digesting this intriguing new tidbit. Cassandra winked at Jacqueline.
Don't worry. I'm sure you're still in the will.
Jacqueline laughed lightly.
Come on. I'm the last person to expect to be in Sui's will. She's already been so generous to me over the years.
I wonder what she did this time.
Cassandra mulled.
Well, until these pictures leaked, I actually thought Astrid might have a chance at inheriting Tyersal Park. Jacqueline theorized.
Astrid?
Never la. Sui is so old-fashioned. She would never leave that house to a girl. She might just as well leave it to her own daughters,
Mabel insisted.
Then if it's just the boys, my bet is on Eddie. I hear that he's really been working overtime to be the number one grandson. He apparently won't leave her side,
Cassandra reported.
I'm not sure it will be Eddie. Sui told me herself that she can't take him seriously.
Jacqueline said.
Well, then she's running out of contenders.
No way she would ever let one of the Leong boys get a hold of the house.
But maybe one of the Akaras?
Mabel wondered. Cassandra snorted.
That would be too ironic for words. Would she really spite Philip and Nikki? The only true Youngs left? In favor of those foreign grandsons getting Tyersal Park?
I think not.
Maybe she's had a change of heart, then.
Don't you think Nikki might have been reinstated?
Jacqueline said.
Definitely not. He's still banned from the house.
My sources tell me that he goes over there every day groveling on his knees, hoping to see her, but he still can't get in.
Why would she suddenly give him Tyersal Park now?
Cassandra argued. Mabel scrunched her face. That stupid boy. Giving everything up for that ugly girl.
Come on, La Mabel. She's not ugly. She's quite pretty, actually. She's just...
not the kind of beauty one would have expected for Nikki, Jacqueline remarked diplomatically.
I know what you mean. Rachel is pretty, but in a very conventional way. Her lack of style doesn't do her any favors either,
Cassandra said. Jacqueline smiled.
I wish I could tell her that she needs to grow out her hair by another 4 inches. That medium-long length is just so American.
Cassandra nodded in agreement.
And her nose is a bit too rounded. Her eyes could be a bit bigger, too.
And have you seen the way she sits?
So frightfully common.
Mabel sniffed.
Ugh! I can't bear to listen to any more of this, Lucia shrieked in anger, pushing her chair back dramatically. You're all talking about Rachel as if she was some kind of show dog. What does it even matter what she looks like as long as they love each other? Uncle Nicky gave up everything to be with her. I think that's so romantic. I can't wait to meet her. And you're all wrong. I know what's going to happen to Tyersal Park, and it's certainly not what any of you think.
Shut up, Lucia! Stop making up stories!
Mabel scolded.
Amma, you and Auntie Cassie just chatter on and on about so much rubbish, but none of you have a clue what's really going on. Do you ever listen to what Grandpa and Daddy talk about?
With that, Lucia stormed out of the breakfast room, the lady staring open-mouthed after her.
What utter nonsense!
Cassandra scoffed. Mabel shook her head gravely. Can you believe how rude that girl has become? I know Bedelli's would be all wrong for her. Those teachers do nothing but keep encouraging her confidence.
My goodness, back in my day at the convent.
Mabel, like many other well-born women of her generation, attended Singapore's venerable Convent of the Holy Infant Jesus. These days, the nuns have long since retired, and by most accounts, corporal punishment is no longer practiced.
If I had talked like that, the nuns would have beat me blue-black with a wooden ruler. 你个孙女没用嘅!
Cantonese for, this lousy girl is useless. A refrain heard by Cantonese daughters since the beginning of time. Jacqueline's eyes narrowed. On the contrary, Mabel, I don't think she's useless at all. I think you have a very smart little girl on your hands. Smarter than I ever realized. Chapter 5 Pulau Club, Singapore. Godfrey Low, the esteemed Supreme Court Justice, could not believe what he was hearing in the stall next to his in the men's room of the Pulau Club.
Yeah, that's so hot. Fucky fuck. I need a close-up. Send me a close-up, please.
What in God's name was happening?
Wait a minute. The pic is still downloading. Wi-Fi is terrible in here.
Oh, my God. I'm looking at it now. Fwah! So fucking sexy.
Someone is looking at dirty pictures on his phone right next to me. But who is it? Sounds like a Hong Kong accent. No wonder all the men in Hong Kong are perverts. That's what you get from a country when you can buy filthy magazines right in the airport.
Looks like it's dripping wet. It's so beautiful I want to lick it all over. Come on! Come on! I'm ready for it now!
Is this creep actually engaging in phone sex in the next stall? Godfrey had heard enough. He emerged from the cubicle hurriedly and went over to the sink, washing his hands furiously with twice the amount of soap he would normally use. He felt dirty all over just listening to that heavy breather in the stall.
I want to slip my whole foot inside.
He wants to do what with his foot? This man should be arrested. Godfrey banged his fist against the stall door and said loudly,
You are a degenerate, a complete disgrace to this esteemed club. Take your dirty business elsewhere, not in our toilets.
Inside the cubicle, Eddie looked up from his phone, completely mystified.
Sorry, I have no idea what that was about. Some ranting weirdo, Singapore's full of them.
Anyway, when will this last coat dry? Stop teasing me, Carlo, I need these shoes now.
Just a few more days. We are waiting for this latest coat of varnish to dry, and then we're going to add one more. Once the patina is perfect, we can overnight them to you in Singapore, Carlo replied. My uncle Tuxin, you know, he's a Thai prince. I can't wait for him to see me in these.
Tuxin started wearing bespoke lobs when he was 5 years old.
Nobody else will appreciate them like he would,
Eddie said, as he gazed longingly at the picture of his new custom-made Marini shoes. These tasseled loafers were glazed a deep lapis blue, a process that took up to 4 weeks to achieve in Marini's Rome atelier, and the shoemaker Carlo had been sending him teaser photos of the progress all through the month.
You will have them by this weekend, Carlo promised.
Eddie ended his call, pulled up his pants, flushed the toilet, and walked back to the lookout. The casual eatery with sweeping views of the nature reserve where Singapore's oldest and most exclusive country club was situated. If you assumed that Eddie did not wash his hands, you would be correct. Returning to the table were members of his extended family had gathered for a luncheon hosted by his Aunt Felicity. He asked his wife Fiona,
"Did you order me the beef sauté and the chicken rice?"
"No one's ordered yet," Fiona replied, giving him a strange frown.
It was then that Eddie noticed that no one at the table was talking, but all eyes were on Felicity. Her eyes were red and swollen with tears, and his mother, Alex, was busily fanning her with a menu.
"What happened? Is it Ama?" Eddie whispered to Fiona.
"Hiya, Ama's fine. But Auntie Felicity just received some news that's quite upsetting."
"What news?" Eddie asked, irritated that he had only been in the toilet for barely 10 minutes and somehow missed the whole first act.
His Auntie Cat was now speaking in a low, soothing tone to Felicity.
"If you ask me, this is all much ado about nothing. It's a slow news week, and the press just had to pounce on something."
"Just watch, Felicity. This will all blow over in a few days,"
Duxin agreed. Eddie, who was seated in the middle of the long table, cleared his throat loudly.
"Well, someone please tell me what's going on."
Alistair handed a cell phone over to him, and Eddie eagerly scrolled through the paparazzi pictures of Astrid and Charlie Wu in India, feeling his pulse begin to race. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. His always perfect, goody-goody cousin had really stepped in shit at long last. What would Ama think when she found out? One by one, all his cousins were falling from grace, and he was the last man standing. He stared at the hundreds of comments left by viewers of the leaked photos.
"Wow, so beautiful! This is my dream engagement!"
Ang Mo Kyo Princess.
"What a fucking waste. Outrageous that CRA spend this much on one day when 75 million Indians still don't have access to clean water."
Clement De Silva.
"Astrid is babelicious. Charlie Wu is the man of the hour." Shilk Shilk 69.
Suddenly, those words sparked something in Eddie's mind that hadn't quite occurred to him until this moment. Man of the hour. Earlier in the week, his grandmother's lawyer, Freddie Tan, a senior partner at Singapore's most prestigious law firm, Tan & Tan, had paid an unexpected visit to Tyersal Park. Aside from Bishop C, he had been the only family member allowed into the private sanctum of his grandmother's bedroom, and the distinguished white-haired gentleman had arrived with a smart-looking Dunhill briefcase and spent a rather long time behind closed doors with Sui. At some point during their meeting, Professor Un and his associate doctor were summoned into the bedroom. Could they have been witnesses to the signing of a new will? Eddie naturally hovered around outside her bedroom like a dog eager for scraps, and when Freddie Tan emerged, he studied Eddie from cravat to wingtips and said,
"You're Alex Young's eldest boy, right? I haven't seen you since you were a teenager. And now look at you. Man of the hour."
Freddie then proceeded to spend the next 10 minutes chatting with Eddie, asking after his wife and which schools his children attended. At the time, it didn't occur to Eddie why a man who had never paid him any attention before was suddenly chatting him up like he was his biggest client. But now it dawned on him. Did his grandmother make him the heir to Tyersal Park? Was this why Freddie was calling him the man of the hour? As this epiphany was still settling in Eddie's brain, he suddenly heard Alistair saying,
"You know, you really can't blame Astrid for this. How would she know that the paparazzi would be there? I'm sure she meant for this to be a very private moment."
"Fucky fuck," Eddie thought irritatedly. What the hell was Alistair doing defending Astrid? Didn't he realize that they all needed to play this to their advantage, especially now when he stood to inherit the whole kit and caboodle? Eddie quickly cut in, drowning out his brother.
"Auntie Felicity, I'm so sorry you had to be put through this horrible scandal. What a disgrace."
Alex scowled at her son as if to say, "Don't make this any worse than it is." Victoria spoke up.
"Actually, I rather agree with Eddie.
This is a complete disgrace.
I can't believe Astrid would be so careless.
Felicity pulled another piece of tissue out of her Jim Thompson silk pouch and sniffed into it dramatically.
My hopeless daughter. We have spent all our lives protecting her from the press, spent so much money protecting her from unwanted attention, and now look how she's repaid us.
At the other end of the table, Pia Akara whispered into her husband's ear. I don't understand what the big deal is. Her daughter just got engaged and the pictures look wonderful. Shouldn't she be happy for her? I don't think Auntie Felicity approves of this fellow, and my family just doesn't like to see themselves in the press, ever, Adam explained. Not even Tattle? Overhearing Pia's comments, Victoria suddenly piped up.
Especially not Tattle. My God, that ghastly magazine. You know, I wrote a few pieces for them back in the 1970s, but then one day the editor said my stories were too cultural. Yes, I believe that's the word he used. He said to me, and I'll never forget it. We don't need any more stories on emerging Chinese artists. We thought you were going to write about your relatives. That's why we hired you.
And that's when I gave my notice.
Eddie continued to fan the flames.
It's one thing to be in Tattle or Town and Country. I'm featured in those magazines all the time. Full disclosure, Pia, Fiona and I have been on the cover of Hong Kong Tattle once, and I alone have been on the cover three times. But it's another thing to see Astrid's photos popping up on these cheap gossip websites. As if she's some actress or even worse, a porno star. Like that Kitty Pong girl Alistair dated for half a minute.
Alistair was indignant.
For the millionth time, Kitty was not a porn star. It was some other girl who looked just like her.
Eddie ignored his brother and kept on talking.
The thing I can't believe is that Astrid would dare to leave Singapore when Ama is so sick. I mean, here we all are, spending every precious moment we have with her.
She was supposed to be in Malaysia, representing us at Prince Ismail's wedding.
I can't believe she deceived us like this, running off to India of all places, getting engaged on an elephant.
Who on earth does Charlie Wu think he is? A Maharaja?
Felicity sniffed angrily.
So vulgar. Those Wus are all the same. They haven't changed in all these years, Victoria tut-tutted, shaking her head.
Did you know that that horrid Wu woman tried to steal Mabel Shang's seamstress?
Imagine the cheek. Thank goodness Mabel rescued that talented girl from her clutches. She made me several nice silk jacquard blouses, perfectly copying the style of this Liz Claiborne blouse Lillian Maytan brought back for me from America. I gave one to Mummy, which she loves. And didn't I give you one too, Cat, when I came to visit you in 1992?
Catherine looked like a deer caught in headlights for a moment.
Oh, yes, that's right, lovely, she said,
remembering that she had immediately passed on the hideous blouse to one of her maids. Eddie furrowed his brow and tried to sound terribly concerned.
I saw Charlie Wu at Davos.
You know, he didn't even have the decency to wear a proper suit and tie to the most important conference in the world.
My God, what if Astrid and Charlie are on their way back to Singapore now? What if she wants him to meet Ama? Or worse, to introduce his mother to Ama?
Can we risk upsetting Ama when her condition is so fragile? She wouldn't dare bring that man to Tyersal Park. Or her seamstress-snatching mother,
Victoria sniffed.
She's not going to have the chance. I'm going to make sure that girl doesn't show her face anywhere near Tyersal Park,
Felicity angrily decreed. Eddie tried to hide a satisfied smirk by looking at the view of the golf course for a moment. Nikki was banned from Tyersal Park. And now, his biggest ally, Astrid, was banished as well. Things could not be working out any better if he had planned it himself. And let's not forget, his sexy-as-fuck bespoke marinis were on their way, too.
Chapter 6 Portofino Elite Estates, Shanghai.
The fountain blue Bentley Mulsanne pulled up by the front steps, and a bodyguard jumped out of the passenger side to open the back door. As Araminta Liku emerged from the car in a sculptural ballerina pink silk strapless Del Pozzo dress, with a contrasting oversized yellow bow and pink sequined miniskirt, the paparazzi began clicking away furiously at her show-stopping look.
Araminta! Araminta, look over here!
Can we have a fashion pose, please, Araminta?
Araminta paused for a moment, pivoted expertly toward the photographer with one hand on her hip, her other hand showing off her exquisite Neil Philippe Suzy Wong Minaudier, before proceeding up the red carpeted steps. Waiting at the freshly lacquered front doors of their mansion were Kitty and Jack. Kitty wore an explosion of powder blue feathers, courtesy of Armani Privé, and chose this occasion to debut her new diamond and antique Burmese cabochon sapphire earrings from Chaumet. Jack squirmed uncomfortably beside her in skinny black jeans and a shawl-collared white tuxedo jacket by Balmain that was made to measure but looked two sizes too small.
Minty, you made it.
Kitty leaned over and gave her an air kiss as another set of photographers stationed by the front doors clicked away.
My yoga retreat is practically right next door to you in Moganshan, so I thought it could do no harm to sneak away for just one night,
Araminta replied.
I'm so glad you did, and now you finally get to meet my husband. Jack, this is my best friend from Singapore, Araminta Lee, Ku.
Thank you for coming, Jack said stiffly.
Fabulous to meet you. I feel like I know you already.
Araminta tried to give Jack an air kiss, but he tilted back reflexively as he saw the glossy red lips coming at him. Kitty prodded him sharply with an elbow, and he quickly straightened up just in time to collide heads with Araminta.
Ayo!
Jack groaned. Araminta appeared to see stars for a second, but quickly recovered and laughed it off.
Please forgive my husband. He's just excited to meet you. He gets excited whenever he's around famous supermodels,
Kitty gushed apologetically. Araminta moved along into the house while Kitty shot daggers at her husband with her eyes.
Don't you know how to do a perfect Eurofashionista triple-cheeked air kiss? You almost gave her a concussion,
Jack muttered under his breath.
Tell me why we're doing this again.
Honey, we were specially chosen by Vogue China to host the most exclusive party of Shanghai Fashion Week. This is the party all the most important Lao Wais.
A derogatory term for Caucasians. In Mandarin, it translates as foreign, white, Caucasian.
Are attending. Do you know how many people would sell their servants' organs for this opportunity? Please stop complaining.
What a waste of time,
Jack muttered under his breath.
Waste of time? Do you even know who my friend is?
Some silly model.
She's not just a model. She's the wife of Colin Koo.
No idea who that is.
Oh, come on. He's the heir to the Koo Empire of Singapore. And besides, Araminta is also the only daughter of Peter Lee. I'm sure you know who that is. He was the first Chinese billionaire in U.S. dollars.
Peter Lee's old news. I'm worth exponentially more than him.
You may have more money, but the Lees have more influence. Don't you realize I'm introducing you to the most influential people in the world?
These people make clothes. How are they influential?
You have no idea. These people control the world. And the cream of Shanghai society wants to be around them. Just think of who has showed up so far. Adele Ding, Stephanie Shi, and now the First Lady is about to arrive.
And it looks like Mozart came with her.
Oh my God, that's not Mozart. That's Karl Lagerfeld. He's a very, very, very important man. He's the Kaiser of fashion.
What the fuck does that even mean?
He is so powerful, he could simply flare one of his nostrils and have me banned from Chanel forever. And I might as well be dead. Please, please, be polite.
Jack snorted. I'll try not to fart in his general direction. After all the VVIP Lao Wais had been greeted, Kitty made her grand entrance into the house while Jack fled to his screening room until it was time for dinner.
As long as you show up for my toast and tell Peng Liyuan how much you adore her singing at some point during the banquet, I don't care what else you do, Kitty had told him.
The whole party was actually an excuse for Kitty to show off the redesign of the house, and she stood on the top step of the former Great Hall, which she had renamed the Salon Grand, surveying the scene. Gone was Colette's zen-like Puli Hotel-inspired decor, and in its place, Thierry Couture had created a look he called Ming Emperor Meets Louis Napoleon at Studio 54. Ming Dynasty urns mingled with rare Aubusson carpets against 60s mod Italian leather and lucite furniture, while the monochromatic Shikumen gray brick walls were now covered in Tibetan yak hair dyed in shimmering shades of persimmon. The 80-foot-long east wall had been covered with purple and crimson latticework screens in homage to the Hall of Dispelling Clouds at the Summer Palace in Beijing. Colette's prized collection of black and white Wu Bo Li calligraphy scrolls had been banished to the museum wing, and in its place were enormous paintings of vibrantly colored canvases by Andy Warhol, Jean-Michel Basquiat, and Keith Haring in antique Rococo gilt frames. Kitty's guests flocked to her side, gushing about the radical transformation.
"It's unbelievable, Kitty," Pan Ting Ting praised.
"So original, Kitty," Adele Ding demurred. "You've really put your stamp on the house," Stephanie Shi said and smiled.
"It's such a trip. All that's missing are the Quaaludes," Michael Kors said.
"Michael, Project Runway just hasn't been the same without you. Please come back." At some point during the social swirl, Araminta appeared at her side with a glass of champagne.
"I thought you could use this. I can see you've been circulating nonstop."
"Oh, thank you. Yes, everyone has been so nice. Except for that awful Englishman over there talking to Hang Huang."
"Philip? But he's usually so charming."
Araminta furrowed her brow in surprise.
"Charming? Do you know what that snob said to me? When I asked him what he did, he actually dared to say, 'I'm a millionaire.'"
Araminta clutched Kitty's arm and doubled over in laughter. Trying to catch her breath, she said,
"No, no, you're mistaken."
Kitty continued her tirade. "So I said to him, 'Well, I'm a billionaire.'"
Wiping the tears of laughter away from her eyes, Araminta explained,
"Kitty, that man is Philip Treacy. He's not a millionaire. He's a milliner, a hat designer. I'm sure that's what he told you. He's one of the best milliners there is. Perineum Wang is wearing one of his hats right over there."
Kitty gazed at the young Shanghai socialite who was sporting a gigantic flesh-colored disc with a bejeweled starfish of pink rubies in the middle that covered 80% of her face.
No wonder he gave me a strange look.
"Oh, Kitty, you can always crack me up."
Araminta was still laughing when a pair of hands reached out from behind her and covered her eyes.
"Oh, who's this?" Araminta giggled.
"Three guesses,"
a man whispered into her ear in an extremely affected French accent.
"Burnett?"
"None."
"Antoine?"
"None."
"Surely it can't be Delphine. I give up."
Araminta whipped around and saw a patrician-looking Chinese man in a three-piece suit and small round tortoiseshell glasses grinning back at her.
"Oliver Sien, you rascal! You had me fooled with that ridiculous accent!"
Araminta giggled.
"Oliver, have you met the chatelaine of this, magnificent estate, Kitty Bing?"
"I was hoping you'd introduce me," Oliver purred.
"Kitty, this is Oliver Sien. He's an old friend from Singapore, and aren't we somehow related now through Colin?"
"Oliver is related to practically everyone who's anyone in Asia, and he's also the consultant at large for Christie's."
Kitty shook his hand politely. "It's a pleasure to meet you. You work for Christie's, the auction house?"
Indeed I do. Oliver is one of the top specialists in Asian art and antiquities, Araminta continued.
There's a little horse sculpture in the library I would love to show you. My husband is convinced it's from the Tang Dynasty, but I think it's a fake. His ex-wife bought it,
Kitty said derisively. I am at your service, madame, Oliver said, extending an arm. They walked into the library, and Kitty led him to a magnificent Macassar and Gabon wool armoire in one corner. She pressed against the tortoiseshell and gilt bronze marquetry doors, which opened to reveal a hidden entryway into Jack Bing's private cigar lounge. Well, this is quite splendid, Oliver exclaimed, looking around the decadently upholstered room. As soon as the doors closed behind them, Kitty sank into one of the tasseled velvet Louis Napoleon smoking chairs and breathed a sigh of relief.
I'm so glad we're finally alone. How do you think it's going?
Unbeknownst to any of her guests, and especially to friends like Araminta, Kitty knew Oliver rather well. He had been secretly advising her for the past couple of years and had been instrumental in helping her acquire the Palace of 18 Perfections, a set of prized Chinese scrolls that had broken auction records 2 years ago to become the most expensive Chinese artwork ever sold. You have nothing to worry about. Everyone is most impressed. Did you notice that Anna actually took her sunglasses off for a moment to scrutinize your Qianlong dragon vessel?
No, I missed that,
Kitty said excitedly. It happened so quickly, but it happened. I also spoke to Carl, and fingers crossed, I think you're getting front row at next season's show in Paris.
Oliver, you're a miracle worker. You'd think spending $9 million a year at Chanel would be enough to get you a front row seat at the damn fashion show.
You'll be front row, dead center, next season. See? You have nothing to worry about. We should head back to the party before anyone suspects anything. We've been gone too long to look at one Tang horse, which, by the way, is not fake, but is frightfully common. Every drawing room on Park Avenue has at least one collecting dust on top of a stack of coffee table books. Just throw it away, or give it to Sotheby's to auction off. Some Philistine will buy it.
As Oliver and Kitty were about to emerge from the hidden cigar lounge, a trio of ladies entered the library. Oliver peeked through the crack in the armoire door and whispered to Kitty,
It's Adele Deng, Stephanie Shi, and Perineum Wong.
Stephanie could be heard saying,
Well, Kitty has certainly succeeded in removing every trace of Colette from the house. What do you think of this Picasso over the desk?
I'm so sick of seeing Picassos. Every starter billionaire in Beijing has one.
You know that in the last 2 decades of his life, the man was doing 4 paintings a day like some desperate whore? The market is flooded with mediocre Picassos. Give me a good Gauguin any day, like the one in my father's museum, Adele Deng said with a sniff.
Colette's vision for this house was utter perfection, and now it's been ruined, Stephanie lamented. I don't care what anyone says. To me, this will always be Colette's house,
Perineum chimed in. Adele walked up to the bull armoire, tracing over the marquetry with her fingers.
This is actually a nice piece, but what the hell is it doing here in the corner?
If you ask me, Kitty's trying so desperately to impress. Every single object in this house is a museum showpiece. Everything is screaming, look at me, look at me. Kitty wouldn't understand the meaning of subtlety if it hit her on those fake breasts. As Marella Agnelli might say, it will take her another lifetime to understand Wicca.
Hiya, what do you expect from a porn star? She will never have Colette's taste. You have to be born with it.
Perineum decreed, readjusting her gigantic hat for the millionth time.
I wonder if we can sneak over to her bedroom wing. I want to see what she did with the space, Stephanie suggested.
She probably put mirrors on the ceiling, Perineum cracked.
Louis XIV mirrors, stolen from Versailles, Adele cackled as she followed the ladies out the door.
Perched in the corner of the cigar lounge, Kitty couldn't hide her look of devastation.
My breasts
are not fake, she cried.
Don't listen to them, Kitty.
Adele Ding told me the house was so original. Why would she lie to my face like that?
Oliver paused for a moment, thinking that Adele was right on one score.
Kitty certainly didn't pick up on the subtler cues.
They're just jealous of all the attention you're getting.
Ignore them.
You know, it's not so easy to ignore those ladies. Adele Ding and Stephanie Shi, they rule the scene here. If this is what they're really thinking, I'll never be able to compete.
Kitty, look, you've already conquered the world stage. These women aren't your competition anymore, don't you see?
I realize that, but I also realize something else. No matter what I do, this will always be known as Colette's house. And this will always be Colette's town, even though she's gone. She was born here. These are her people. I will always be an outsider in Shanghai, no matter what I do. Why did I even bother spending 2 years redecorating this house? I should be where people appreciate me.
I couldn't agree more. You have houses all over the world. You can be anywhere you want to be, creating your own social universe. Honestly, I don't know why you don't live in Hong Kong full time. It's my favorite city in Asia.
Karina Kotang tells me it will take at least one generation for me to break into Hong Kong society. Harvard might have a chance if I enroll him in the right kindergarten, but it's already too late for Giselle. You know, the only place where Chinese people have ever treated me well is Singapore. Look how nice Araminta Lee has been. And my friends, Wandi, Tatiana, and Georgina, live there part-time too.
Oliver didn't want to remind Kitty that Araminta was actually born in mainland China and that neither Wandi, Tatiana, nor Georgina were native Singaporeans. But he began to see a new opportunity arise. You know, you already own one of the most historic houses on one of the best streets in Singapore. I had assumed you'd spend more time there after you acquired it.
I thought I would, but then I got pregnant with Harvard, and Jack insisted that I give birth in the United States. And after that, we just somehow spent more time in Shanghai because I needed to redo this house.
But your poor Frank Brewer estate in Singapore is completely neglected. It's only half decorated.
Think of what you could accomplish there if you focused your attention on it. Think of all the accolades you would receive from architectural preservationists if you truly restored it to its former glory.
My God, I'm sure my friend Rupert would insist on doing a feature story for the World of Interiors.
The wheels in Kitty's head began turning.
Yes. Yes. I could transform that little house. Make it even more spectacular than this cursed place. And it will be 100% mine. Will you help me?
Of course. But you know, aside from the house, I do think it's time for you to undergo another radical transformation as well. You need a new look that will launch you into Singapore society properly.
My God, the Tassel crowd will love you. Let's get you a photo shoot and feature story. Hell,
I'm sure I can wrangle you the cover.
You really think so?
Absolutely. I can see it already.
We'll get Bruce Weber to shoot it.
You, Giselle, and Harvard romping through your historic heritage property in Singapore, surrounded by a dozen golden retrievers, all wearing Chanel, even the dogs.
Can we get Nigel Barker to shoot it instead? He's so dreamy.
Of course, dear. Whoever you want.
Kitty's eyes lit up. Chapter 7. Residences at One Can Hill, Singapore. The cook had brought home the most scrumptious Singaporean breakfast delicacies from the market. There was chwee kueh, delicately steamed rice flour cakes topped with salty radish pickle and chili sauce, freshly grilled roti prata, crisp, buttery Indian bread served with a curry dipping sauce, chai tau kueh, daikon radish cakes pan-fried with egg, shrimp, and spring onions, and cha siu pao, sweet barbecued pork buns. As Eleanor and Philip gleefully unwrapped the brown wax paper packets of food,